Interested in taking your insider intelligence research further? Our new Analyst Access program offers subscribers the unique opportunity to gain a deeper understanding of our comprehensive banking and payments forecasts, reports, and benchmarks by putting you in direct conversation with the experts who conduct the research. Book your first session now through insiderintelligence.com/analyst access.
I think what the issuers have done, and I think they've done it in a very powerfully, is to wrap lifestyle around this core proposition and to continue to push that envelope. You know, how is this card going to enhance my life? Not just making a purchase, protecting myself, allowing me to travel.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Banking and Payments Show, a Behind the Numbers podcast from eMarketer. Today is December 12th. I'm Rob Rubin, GM of Financial Services, and your host today. Today's episode will be our last until after the new year. We'll be back on January 9th. I'd be remiss if I didn't first thank everyone who's listened this year. And I also want to thank our sponsors who supported us, including Wells Fargo, TransUnion, Adobe, and Affinity Solutions. We really appreciate your support, and we really appreciate all the support from our listeners. The title of today's episode, Beyond the Basics, Next Gen Features in Cashback Credit Cards. And today we're going to talk about our new report that looks at new features the top cashback credit cards are now offering, and how much consumers actually value those features. And that's based on an audit of those cards' features and a proprietary survey of about 1,500 U.S. adults who use cashback credit cards. Joining me today is Banking and Payments Show regular Principal Analyst of Payments, David Morris. Hey, David, how you doing?
Hey, Rob. How are you?
I'm doing well. We don't live in the same city, so it's too bad that we don't get to see each other. But I saw you in Las Vegas, and that was fun. And it's fun to be able to see you on Zoom.
It's fun to see you on Zoom as well. And I will forever be grateful for actually having to physically shake in your hand.
Yeah.
That was a nice touch.
After all these years, right? Do you have any special plans for the upcoming holiday?
No, I don't think anything special. You know, I think a good straightforward holiday with family is on the table.
What's the holiday food that you're looking forward to?
Well, Christmas Eve, I actually usually make some kind of over-the-top dish. I'm not sure what it's going to be yet. I'm thinking a bordelaise sauce, filet mignon, maybe crawfish stuffed or crab stuffed.
Nice. I think we're going to do a beef tenderloin with like a gorgonzola sauce, something terrible.
Yeah, we're in the same ballpark then.
Yeah, we're in the same ballpark. Well, I can't talk about it anymore. We won't be able to continue recording.
Yeah, I'm hungry. I haven't eaten yet either.
Let's get right to the headlines then. In the headlines, we chat about a top story as it relates to our episode. And for today, because it's the holiday season and we're talking about credit cards, I thought we'd discuss a recent CNBC article that I saw that talks about the limited time merchant rewards that are available to consumers during this Christmas holiday season. Have you noticed any of those things, David?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I breathe cards for a living as a consumer and a professional. This is when they start ramping up the marketing because, you know, the holiday season is so important. I'm sure we have the stat, Rob, somewhere here at Insider Intelligence. But I think holiday shopping, isn't it about 30-40% of the shopping that's done all year?
It is for a lot of brands and a lot of retailers. It's the make or break time of year. And these cards, what they offer is through the merchants, they'll give consumers an incentive to use that card at a retailer. So you'd get, for example, 5%. I like how they say it, 5% off the first $100. They can't just say $5 off your purchase.
Well, it sounds better the first way, doesn't it?
Right, I guess it does. So those are the kinds of things. And I guess one of my questions is, are these rewards just something that you get if you use the card? Or do you think consumers actually pay attention and purposefully strategize which cards to use in each retailer?
This is a great question because these have been around for a long time, you know, and I think if you even go back 5 years, I think the opportunity here, it's a missed opportunity. You have all of these offers that are being promoted here in an article, but they're worthless if the cardholder can't actually use them, find them easily, and apply them easily. Right. And so there's, I think, been a sea change over the last several years in that regard. I think consumers could certainly be more aware of how to use them, how to readily use and apply them.
I think Capital One makes you jump through a little bit of a hoop. You got to go to their website to redeem, whereas others might automatically apply if you use the card at the retailer.
I think, yeah, you know, you mentioned our cashback study, and there's 10 cards in that study. All of them at this point have some kind of merchant offering within their websites. And you can go to Chase, you can go to Bank of America, you can go to American Express, and they're starting to really compete with each other on being able to help consumers with those offers.
Right.
I think by the same token, you know, and I'll just speak as a consumer here, I have 12 credit cards. I know why and how I want to use each one of them. I'm very good at it. I'm a bit of a magician, in my opinion, on earning rewards. I'm the perfect credit card candidate in that regard. And even I have some difficulty finding out what kind of offer fits my lifestyle, fits my need. And then from there, how do I apply it? And I'll say anonymously, there's three issuers that are in my head, and they all have a really great window into being able to take a look at what offers there are. But I have to spend time to be able to move through it. I have to be able to make choices. I have to start determining where I want to shop in order to apply the offer that I want. It's cumbersome, and I think there's still a lot of streamlining and automation that could be done here. And where I would go here, Rob, is, you know, think about how long have we been hearing about something like location-based offers, for example?
I know, but I think they're creepy.
Well, there's the privacy creepy issue, yes. But if you want to enable a consumer to utilize an offer, I would use that as an example of a really powerful lever to be able to persuade a customer to be able to use and apply it, to be proactively given an offer while you're in a store. And there's one issuer, to my knowledge, that does that. American Express actually has some location-based offer capability. Another issuer that I think has been in the vanguard being able to help enable these merchant offers is Bank of America.
Yep.
As an issuer, you want to be able to use this as a way to help build a relationship with merchants, right? You want to make money from this transaction, share that with merchants, and you want to be able to help that merchant continue to sell to that particular customer. And so what Bank of America actually does is it will give you a notification or an alert for an offer at a particular retailer that you've actually used.
But not when you're in the retailer's location.
No, not location-based. American Express does a little bit of that. Bank of America, what they have down, I think, from an alert standpoint, is simply making you aware, if you're a loyal Best Buy customer, that here's a Best Buy offer. And that's where, when I go back to just, this is me as a consumer, and I think I'm a very sophisticated credit card consumer.
Yeah, you are.
And even I have difficulty being able to find that and apply it. And Bank of America can help me do that and help Best Buy retain me.
Can I ask you, what's the biggest thing you ever bought on a credit card?
Gotta ask.
Gosh. Well, I've tried to buy a car on it. They wouldn't let me. So that's a try. They cap that at $5,000.
Yeah.
Because the car dealers hate that.
Yeah.
So I would go with the car. I've put my taxes on it. That was a lot.
Yeah. I bought a cabin.
You bought a cabin on your card?
Uh-huh. On the internet.
That's amazing. Yeah, because I put everything on my cards. I'm a Pavlovian case study. What can I say?
Let's dig a little deeper into our cashback credit card report and get right to story by numbers. In story by numbers, we pick a number or two that helps us take a deep dive into the episode's topic. And today, for story by numbers, I picked a stat from the benchmark comparison and the one from the survey we did with cashback card users. My number one number is 15, and that is in our emerging features benchmark. We look for novel features. We identified 49 features, and we carefully reviewed these 10 popular no-fee cashback cards to see if they had those features. And what we found is that 15 of our 49 emerging novel features weren't supported by any of these cards. So what features weren't supported?
Well, I'd flip that a little and say also that if you look at those 49 features and you take a look at the demand for them and the value that consumers ascribe them, let's just look at the top 10 features in this study. Six of those 10, no issuer offers them. That allows me to narrow the net a little bit. And something like free identity theft insurance comes to mind. Not out there. Very popular. It was the top feature.
It was, right. We're going to talk about that. But why did we select the features if nobody has them?
Well, ultimately, you mentioned something I think is very important to remember, that we're looking at emerging features. We're looking at the emerging rare and novel features, right? Uh-huh. This study is not about features that everybody already has.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's about helping issuers think outside of the box, think about the next thing they want to be able to do to be able to differentiate
themselves
in the marketplace. And I think you also have to remember that cashback credit cards, they don't exist in a vacuum. You know, they're very popular. They're a very strong offering, but they need to compete with and respond to innovations across that consumer credit card space. There's co-brand cards out there that are doing some amazing things. There's fintech co-brands out there that are doing some amazing things.
Yeah.
You know, there's a cashback value proposition here, but there's many other things that don't necessarily differentiate a cashback card from these other cards, and they have to be able to compete. Let's take getting rewarded for paying off a balance. That actually, by the way, I presented with a major issuer and I advocated, you know, to them that there's this high demand for getting rewarded for paying off a balance. And this is something you should look into. And how do you think the client responded initially, Rob? What would you think?
I think they asked you if you had a good understanding of their business model.
I think they thought maybe I needed to go back to graduate school. Yeah. And then I asked them to step back a little bit. One, to think about a target audience to which this could be applied, right? We're not advocating that this is something that's going to be applied to the Chase Sapphire Reserve. Think about introductory cards that cashback plays a role in, right? Think about the fact that actually Citi Double Cash, a cashback card in this study, it really does offer this in a way because you get 1% of the 2% cashback when you make a purchase, and you do get the other 1% when you pay it. You don't have to pay the balance, but you're paying off that purchase.
Now, can a consumer play a game and get one credit card to do a balance transfer offer? Like if they got an offer from a credit card, like here, open this credit card and transfer your balance. So you pay off a credit card balance using the other credit card's cash balance transfer.
Well, consumers game this all the time. And frankly, I mean, I do a little bit of gaming. I don't open and close accounts. It's how well you play the rewards game, right?
That does great on your credit report, by the way. Opening and closing accounts just works great on the credit report.
It's not the best thing. Yeah. I think this is something that, you know, I'm using this as an example, an extreme example, truly, because I think there's a lot of potential in a feature like this. Is it for every cashback card? No. But you're looking at being able to incentivize positive behavior, and you're also looking at a slightly risky customer who you know is going to revolve a little bit. That's what Citi did. That's what Double Cash is around.
That makes sense, just to focus in on the audience. I want to just do the second number because you mentioned it already. And 58% of the respondents in our survey said that free identity theft insurance was extremely valuable. And as we pointed out, none of those 10 popular cards that we looked at actually offer that. So if it's such a popular feature, will someone start to offer it? Why don't they offer it? Is it such an expensive thing for them to do if they scale it like that?
I think someone is definitely going to offer it. I would bet that you'll see something like this in the next 18 months. I'd back up and give Discover a lot of credit here. Discover actually offers identity theft insurance. It's one of the only issuers out there that does. But what they do is they integrate that into an identity theft bundle that does a lot of other things. And then you have to pay for it, $15 a month. And so they're really on the ball, I think, with being able to introduce and promote security features in a very simple and straightforward way. You know, I think there's an opportunity to be able to pull that out. And if an issuer wants to be able to stand that up as a standalone feature, I think there is a cost-effective way to do that. Certainly, you know, you can always manage that in terms of the limits on, you know, what you're going to pay out and for what things.
You could say it's $10 a month or it's free if you use our card 3 times a month.
Yeah, there's all sorts of ways to tie that to activity. Yeah. So I definitely think there's opportunity to be able to offer it. I think if you look at the security space generally, I actually think issuers have missed an opportunity to more narrowly and cleanly market these features and tools.
Yeah. So in story by numbers, I think that those 49 features are something that these credit card issuers need to look at, especially given that 15 of them are popular with consumers, but not yet available in any of these cards. So there's an opportunity for differentiation, and particularly around that identity theft one. But we've been agreeing too much. So I want to transition to our last segment for argument's sake. And in our final segment, we're going to argue, and we only argue nicely because we're good friends, about the different approaches to thinking about some of these results. Because I think that even though when asked how important are these features, and consumers will say, well, identity theft, you know, 58% of consumers said that's extremely valuable. But I would say that if they had a card that offered that for free, I'm going to argue this point, and I hope you take me up on it. A card that offers free identity theft protection, and then a card with the same kind of features, but a better reward, but no identity theft protection. The consumer's going to choose the one with the better reward and forego the free identity theft protection. So even though they say it's extremely valuable, it's not going to be ever quite as valuable as the primary reward behind the card.
I completely agree.
No,
I'm just kidding. You make an excellent point. I think that we do have to recognize clearly this rewards proposition is incredibly powerful. It's why cashback cards are popular. You know, give me the cash, make it easy for me to understand and easy for me to get it. And rewarding purchase behavior is a very, very strong motivator for being able to craft future behavior.
Right.
And I've already indicated that I'm an example myself. But that doesn't mean that cards cannot be much, much, much more. And they are much, much, much more to consumers. And I can use myself as an example. You know, sure, rewards are important. But what I have been just fascinated with as a consumer is the evolution of these cards into their lifestyle statements. They enhance your life. Mm. You know, they're incredibly, incredibly useful and powerful. If you spend a little bit of time and take a look at the features that you get. And we can just talk as consumers here, Rob. I mean, I'm going to stay at a Park Hyatt this weekend for a night for free. It's an $800 room. I got it for 30,000 points. And that's on a Hyatt card that I'm able to get a free night on. There's the opportunity to use my Chase Sapphire Reserve card as my primary insurance when I travel. Are you kidding me? That's so helpful.
I have to say, my daughter is going to be spending a semester abroad starting in January. And we picked, I think it's a You Promise card, but it's because there's no international transaction fees when she uses it.
Right. No transaction fees.
Right.
And I think what the issuers have done, and I think they've done it in a very powerfully, is to wrap lifestyle around this core proposition and to continue to push that envelope. You know, how is this card going to enhance my life? Not
right.
just making a purchase, protecting the purchase, protecting myself, allowing me to travel.
But I still say that when push comes to shove, all that stuff goes, maybe not for you, but for a lot of consumers, they'll just go for the biggest reward. Like all of the stuff in the background of protecting my purchase and protecting my identity and monitoring my social security number or whatever other features. If there was one card that gave you 2.5% cash back and one card that gave you 2% cash back, consumers would prefer the one with 2.5%.
I think that you make a very strong argument there, and I think that that would be true for some consumers. I think the way for an issuer to be more than that and to be competitively more than that, there's opportunities that they've actualized that provide an umbrella of a much, much broader and deeper value proposition
right.
that's also very valuable, and that you have choices out there that allow you to pick and choose from among cards that best fit your lifestyle.
Right. I think we probably have to call this a draw. I understand your point, right? Like, sure, what might motivate you to get the card at first doesn't necessarily keep you motivated over a long period of time. And you need other kinds of things to get people to use the card on a regular basis, to remember that that should be their top card, or to use it when they're traveling, or to use it for travel insurance or for whatever it might be.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, what the issuer is doing there and is intending is that the more you're able to craft a lifestyle around travel, the more you're going to use that card to do the very thing that they ultimately want you to do, which is use it to spend on travel. You know,
right.
I think Chase has come really a long way, for instance, after introducing the Sapphire program and even before, just evolving and competing against American Express, which was in the vanguard in being able to provide those travel benefits. It's one of the reasons the Sapphire program program does so well.
Right.
If we're talking about rewarding behavior, what they have down, the issuers, is exactly what you say, you know, rewarding purchase behavior. One of the things I think where there's a lot of room to innovate on, what other ways are there to reward behavior?
Right.
If you want to go that route. And one of the findings in our study, for instance, you have relationship rewards. These are powerful. The demand among the card prospects in this study was high. Right. How many of the 10 cashback cards in the study offer relationship rewards, Rob? How many do you think?
I don't know. Three.
One.
One.
Just one. And then I'll flip the switch. Would you, Rob, like to be additionally rewarded for the relationship you have with that card issuer, maybe with a bank account? You get 2% with the card, but if you have a bank account with the credit card issuer, maybe you get a little bit more. Would you like that, Rob? Come on.
I might like it. I'm not a rewards guy. So
really?
We'll just leave it like that. I'm just not.
So you've just counter-argued yourself.
I know. Now I'm going to end the show.
But I think there's a lot of ways to be able to supplement that rewards proposition. There's also a lot of ways to be able to think beyond purchase behavior to reward cardholders and broaden and deepen the relationship as a result.
All right. Well, I think you might have won my argument, and I'm going to side with you. And I think that that's going to be a wrap for the year. Thank you, David. We had you on so many times this year, and it gets better and better every time.
I really enjoy being here, Rob, and thank you. You do such a great job. I love being here.
Yeah. Looking forward to 2024 and seeing lots of David Morris on the show. I want to thank everyone for listening to the Banking and Payment Show and eMarketer podcast, and also special thanks and happy holidays to our editor, Todd. Our next episode will be next year on January 9th, so be sure to check it out. See you then. Have a great day, everyone.
Take care, everyone. Take care, Rob.